Morning, Jess. How's it going?
Good Saturday morning, team. Yeah. How's it going? I'm in newly cooled off New York.
Wonderful, wonderful. We just went from, like, you know, 105 degrees or something like that to something like 60, 65.
Wow.
So I'm chilling. And
that's high. I knew there was something that hit the east and the south. It looked like it kind of hit basically everything but, like, the northwest.
Heat dome, like California.
Yeah.
Heat dome. They basically said, like, you know, nature basically blew a giant, like, just a giant cell of hot air, hot, humid air, and then closed the lid on it. And we just sat with it for like 4 days. And
you make it sound like Mother Nature farted in your faces and then Dutch ovened you.
We got Dutch ovened. Like, yeah. We got Dutch ovened.
So it was like humid too.
Yeah. Do you know one time, speaking of Dutch oven, one time I was a first year attorney at the law firm, and I was overseeing like 30 fucking contract attorneys, and we were just like blowing through emails in a discovery motion. Like, we were just reading just fucking random German emails. Okay. And like a German, our client was German. And then someone made a joke about a Dutch oven. You know, like when we were kids, you would fart and then throw the cover over someone and call it a Dutch oven. And someone got really upset because they said that that was a reference to the Holocaust. And
oh, come on.
Yeah. And dude, I had to put that whole day was a giant HR issue for me just dealing with that. It was crazy.
Wait, how did you get sucked into it?
Because I was managing them, and someone came up to me and they were like, this person was making Holocaust jokes, and I'm like, what happened? And they were like, well, they made a reference to the Dutch oven. And I was like, oh, you mean like where you fart on someone and you put a blanket on them? And they were like, yeah, that's a reference to the gas chambers. What do you think the Dutch refers to? I was like, isn't that Holland? They're like, no, Deutsch. That's German. And I was like, I never thought about it that way. What the fuck am I supposed to do with this knowledge? this is why I hate work, you know.
Yeah, shit. No kidding. Yeah. So that I guess that all shook out eventually.
Yeah, nothing happened. A lot of people got very upset, and it was a very touchy thing. There's a lot of, like, if you're managing 30 attorneys, and
yeah,
some are like really chill, some others are very touchy. There's a lot of weird personalities. There's a lot of weird personalities in white collar spaces, period.
Mm-hmm.
Some very fragile, you know, on the verge people. Some people like on the verge of depression. Some people are total fucking degenerates. Like, there's just a lot of like personality issues, I would say. So
I can see that. And these guys, they're professional arguers. You do not want to piss them off.
And also, you know, I realized I never want to manage people. And I had a deal. There was another fucking HR issue that came up recently at work. And I had to become involved to a limited degree. And it was just really awkward and terrible, but also revealing to me again that a lot of people in white collar spaces are insane. They're insane.
Yep.
So
absolutely,
you know,
insane.
Yeah, and this one involves someone getting fired and everything. It was terrible.
Oh, yeah, it's just awkward to see that. So I understand the work. I understand the work needs to get done. If in a big organization, it's just A, I want to stay as far away from that as possible, and B, the people who actually kind of like that work are also people I don't want to get too close with.
Yeah I know.
Yeah,
we were right before we hit record, we were talking about this people's relationship with work, which I guess is sort of the general theme of what we're going to be potting about is,
yeah,
because I've had a, I don't know if I've had a major rethinking of work, but I've, but do you know, like, where you had, like, my feeling about it is, like, in a way you have to delude yourself to get through the major part of your career years, because it's a big chunk of your life. And it requires, I think, you to be kind of a believer in some of the things that they say about it. But now that I'm sort of like much later in the cycle, not the cycle, the arc, I'd say, like, I'm starting to just kind of like, I'm starting to kind of just ditch those beliefs, which I think are myths, and sort of just seeing work for what it really is. And it's easier to see it that way when you're, when you've got some years, decades under your belt, let's say.
You might, and you're a little closer to the finish line. You got a few more, you got a few more stacks in the bank. I mean, you have to at least believe in the future.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. Regardless of the work itself, you have to believe that there will be a payoff, so whatever number of years you're expected to sacrifice. I think everyone's pretty upfront that that it's a slog, and like, we can go into the whole like, oh, if you do something you love, you'll never work a day in your life bullshit. But I think that's always been, no one's actually truly believed that, I think. But you do have to believe that there is a payoff somewhere. Like, a friend and I were talking, you know, like I didn't know that the good discounts don't start until you're 65. I thought it was 55, to be honest. So I was like, okay, 55, I can kind of grasp. 65, I have no fucking idea how I'm going to keep the wheels on this bus for like essentially another quarter century.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not going to be a bus by the time I'm 65.
You mean in general, like, you think there's going to be like at a social level, you're saying, like,
both, like, me as a human being, I don't know if I can keep this shit together for 25 years.
Yeah,
give me my 20% discount, my 10% discount on home insurance or whatever.
You saying, like, it's like having another 25 years of head down doing your work is a little bit too much? Like,
yeah, I can't. Yeah. I cannot like fathom that. There's just, I don't know how to wrap my head around the psychological tricks I'll need to pull on myself to get me to do that.
I think it's gotten harder. You know what I mean? Like, I think a generation ago it was easier because there was some truth to the value of work and the sort of like social benefit of it. I don't want to overstate it. I don't know what it was like, because that's not my generation, but it did seem like people tended to have a more positive view of work. Even if work wasn't significantly different, like, you know, I think a lot of the jobs were probably not that different than what we have today. But I don't know, like, my dad worked until his like late 60s and then retired, and then his company begged him to go back because they needed, you know, it was like old legacy tech and stuff, and they couldn't hire anyone young to replace him because no one was doing the stuff that he did. And and he was like, yeah, sure. They're like, we'll pay your pension, we'll do everything, and we'll still pay you a salary. In fact, we'll give you a raise, but just come back and, like, you know, let's eke out a little bit more, whatever, because we're still making money off of you. So he said, yeah, sure. And then I asked him, like, aren't you kind of, isn't that, you know, once you thought you got out, they pull you back in. He was like, "Yeah, what's the problem? I enjoy going in." He was like, you know,
damn,
I like the people there or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
There's at least a sense of upward trajectory, right?
For him, it was comfort. I think he just felt really comfortable at work. And
sure, and it was good work. It was probably like fairly well compensated. It's like he you know, was able to raise his family, probably got a comfortable living for himself. Like, why not? Honestly. But I think, you know, at least in my line of work, the work itself has gotten severely bullshitty. Mm. Like, dealing with people has turned into an absolute fucking nightmare. Really? And everything is eroding by the minute. Mm.
So it feels unsustainable.
It's unsustainable. Mm. The part where, like the speed of technology changing very rapidly, I'm okay with. That's fine. Like, learn new skills, keep yourself sharp, stay on top of things. That all was fine. And that's generally, you know, how I felt, you know, in the 2010s. Some older hands were, you know, grumbling, like, why do you need to learn all these new architectures, all these new things? And generally, you know, Generally, like, I was okay with that. You should be able to, like, adapt your skills. It's a changing market. We should be staying competitive. And this is not a field that can stay stagnant for very long. If any field is, I don't know, maybe law is different. I don't know. But then, like, over time, I was realizing, like, all this new stuff that they are expecting you to know, A, they keep cramming more into the job description while not paying you more. You're not learning for the sake of learning or to innovate or to actually do a better job. You're just learning it because your bosses want to, you just want to stay one step ahead of the musical chairs where the bosses want to fire people. And you just want to stay ahead, one step ahead of the layoffs while compensation is going down. And the technology itself is getting increasingly more and more bullshit. So, like, just stack, like, knowing how to do a new, like JavaScript web framework or something. I don't want to. Not because, like, oh, I'm set in my ways. No, because that is horrible technology that shouldn't be inflicted on the world. And if you want me to know it, you're asking me to sell a part of my, like, professional soul either, even. Like, my dignity as a worker is being actively degraded by forcing me to know this.
Yeah, tech
And
sounds
then
pretty dystopian.
It's
It really
pretty
does.
bad.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
Which is sad because it used to be the best, you know? Like I feel like I feel like the repeated sort of like tech bubbles and this global capital laundering scheme that it's become has really ruined it. It's brought a lot of bad people into it.
It's yeah, a ton of bad people. Part of it is just the industry has matured, I think. So part of that is just gonna it's just formalized in that sense, if you know what I mean. So credentialism is more and more of a thing, more like arcane, bullshitty, like gatekeeping processes to keep that's more geared towards keeping employment away from people instead of getting people into employment. Part of that is to be expected, but it's still sad to see. And the net effect is that actual progress is way down. Maybe we're going backwards in some ways. Like I don't know. Have you ever heard of LeetCoding? coding?
I have. Isn't that like, if I understand, it's like some website that helps you helps young people like prepare for tech interviews or something?
Yeah, it's a website, but it's called LeetCode because of what it is. Like LeetCode is just like problems, like coding coding problems that you're expected to like they'll just throw them at you in a coding interview basically. And you have to be able to answer them as part of the interview. All that part was fine like for a
I
long
remember
time.
doing stuff like that when I came out of
Yeah.
college. Yeah.
Like sure, a basic check to make sure that, you know what you're about. Nobody's expect it was still when when I was coming up through that, I didn't interview for a long time because just because like I had my own company, so like I wasn't like going out and getting a job every year or two or whatever the way other people were. But the last so last time I actually went through a formal interview process like that was maybe like 2013, 2014. So that being said, like it was fine. And it wasn't really about nailing the right answer even back then. It was really they really wanted to see how you thought a problem through. Of course, you should want to get the right answer, but it still was a far more holistic process. Now, a lot of people compare it to like the Qing Dynasty, like civil service exams. Like just like there's people who literally grind like 80 hours or something on LeetCode just to be able to pass like a meta interview or something. Like you can see how that's now counterproductive to act the goal of actually hiring someone talented and quick on their feet, maybe teaching them what they need to know on the job, and then putting them in and get and putting them to work. Now it's a really baroque, like Byzantine process that's like part psychological exam, part like eugenics, and like part like just seeing how much pain you're willing to subject yourself to.
That sounds miserable.
It is miserable and so counterproductive, and yet here we are. So
Which
in
is
the
sad
light of all
because
that,
it's this hyper competition seems to undercut what made tech a great thing to be in the first place, which was like it seemed to be really back in the day, it really seemed to be a culture of like people sharing and not being exclusive and trying to help each other. And it was almost like this culture of like almost more so than any other industry, or I guess they didn't even really like to call it an industry, a lot of these people, but like it was really about trying to
because they were anti-industry.
Yeah, I remember, like, for example, like I remember, and this is the 90s, right? Like 96 97, and there was this guy, we called him Jesus because he looked like Jesus,
and he John Denver, you mean?
He was more like of a redhead with like aviator glasses.
Oh, and, okay, nice.
And he had like a moppy red curly hair kind of guy, and he didn't shout. I mean, he was just classic like Linux guy.
Okay.
And he was on my floor. No, we had a number of these guys on my floor. At the college at university, he was a comp sci senior or something like that. And I always thought he was super strange, just a weirdo, kind of grumpy, you know, like, and he was a senior, he was older, so he was kind of like, and very, very smart. And he was always on his computer hacking something. And I remember one day, on my intro to comp sci class, which is like a necessary, like, you have to take that, it's the weed out class for engineering, was a C program.
Yeah, you were EE.
Yeah, it was EE.
In undergrad.
Yeah, and the weird thing is the first class in EE was actually a C programming class, and it was so difficult. And that class was actually very difficult, and because it was like they threw you at the deep end of the pool. There was no like gentle intro. It was like we're going to start right coding day one, and nice. Because they wanted to weed people out, mm-hmm. and I needed help. I could not get my thing to compile. So I was like, man, I got to go ask Jesus. I can't get this shit to work. And he's going to yell at me. He's going to make fun of me. But whatever, I got to go. And so I go over to his room and I said, hey, dude, his name is Eric. I said, hey, Eric, sorry to bug you, man, but I kind of need help with the thing. He was so nice. This is the only time I've never realized what a nice guy this was. He's like, sure. He comes over to my room. He starts looking at the code. He's like, ah, okay, here's the problem. You see this? And he's like, point, you know, he's going line by line and just explaining it to me. And he was so friendly and nice. And I felt like that era of like computer geek, they were kind of like that. Like if you wanted to know something and needed their help, they were more than happy to help you. Do you know what I mean?
He was probably delighted to come help out.
Yeah, he was so nice, like mm-hmm. gentle, you know, and I was like, wow, what a teacher. Mm-hmm. And generally I found that a lot of the people then were like that. They really wanted to help you and help you understand things. And the leak code culture, I don't know much about it because I haven't been near tech in a long, long time, but like, I feel like I didn't miss out. like this,
it's,
you know,
it's disgusting.
Oh God.
But
how
like,
sad,
like,
you know?
It is really sad. And I think part of it is like the invasion of the finance bros. So I think tech becoming glamorous and rich was actually its biggest downfall.
It really was.
Because it just drew in all the wrong incentives and all the wrong people.
Yeah.
Like that scale, that story that you just told on a much bigger scale is, you know, that famous story about Steve Jobs going on a tour of like Xerox PARC.
Mm.
You know, back in the 70s or late 60s or something.
Yeah, when he found the GUI, when he found the Windows, the first
and the mouse,
like a windowed, yeah, and the mouse, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then the story is then like, he's like, oh shit, this is the future. And then runs home, and then like, that's, you know, that's the origin story for the next direction that he took Max in at the time. And now the story kind of takes on this whole like, wow, Xerox was a bunch of idiots, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, like you completely missed the story. The story, like, you missed the bigger, the meta narrative of what the industry was actually like in those days. And this is another privately held company that also lives and dies by profits and loss, that was willing to invite the CEO of another company in, give them a complete tour of their internal workings. And and Apple benefited from that culture of sharing.
So yeah, now it's like, now it's like, haha, he fucked them.
Yeah, he really got one over on them. Like, he, yeah. ba- like, like, like the, you if in a telling of the story, you'd think that like Steve busted in Mission Impossible style and like stole that shit. And then Xerox was like, well, I guess that's just it then.
Yeah.
But that's so the story is like, okay, Apple went on to become a fantastic, you know, fantastically profitable company, obviously. But then it's like you missed the story, which is that this collaborative culture led to companies like that. So if you want to replicate that kind of success, you're going to need to replicate the culture in which that kind of success was enabled.
Right.
This was a free flow of ideas, of actual technology. This is why Bill Gates was so shat upon when he put out that like page long ad in tech journals bitching about how software cannot possibly be free and open. Like mm-hmm. you have to charge. He's basically complaining about people like ripping off Windows or trying to make like open source shit. Right. He was.
Yeah, but his view seems to have won out. I know, you know, people will point to all like the wins and the ways that open source has really proliferated and stuff. But I think overall, the reality is like tech has become extremely locked down, proprietary.
Private fiefdoms.
Yeah.
Varoufakis
Farkas calls it cloud capital, right? Like, is this theory that the tech billionaires, the oligarchs, you know, what they really do is they own the new land of like technology. And Amazon is really land ownership and, you know, of the space in which commerce takes place, and you have to pay them a toll.
You know, sure.
That's how he became the fourth richest man in the world and all this. And it's, yeah, like everything is closed. Everything is locked. Everything, you have to pay a toll. There's no like free open space anymore.
Mm-hmm. So the lack of accountability has also led to a severe internal culture of rot. Mm-hmm. The actual tech is degrading, visibly degrading, because there's no visibility or accountability from the outside. They're all run like monopolies because they functionally are.
How do we see that, like that lay people? Like, how do we see that the technology is bad? How, like, because I think a lot of people will say technology is actually amazing right now. I tend to disagree with that. I think tech sucks. I'm with you. But how do you think we see that, like, in everyday life? Is there a tangible way in which technology is actually quite bad?
I guess one of the lowest hanging fruits of that is just the sheer ubiquity of ads.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like any website, I have stuff pretty carefully blocked. Like some of it is at a DNS level, so there's a lot I don't see. And then I'll go to like my mom's house or just a coffee shop or something, and then try to open a website. My God, why do I have to do that stupid, like, what is it, the GDPR, like, pop-up every goddamn time?
Yeah, yeah.
Like accept the cookies, deny all. I'm glad that recently more and more sites have the reject all option, but that's like the first thing you gotta do just to read a thing on a website.
Yeah.
You gotta scroll past a billion ads, each like more obscene than the next. It's just terrible. It's a terrible user experience. And yeah, that's,
oh,
just
so, you know, when someone gives you a link online and you're like, hey, they're like, oh, check this out, and I click it and it takes me to a website. First of all, I don't know what app is even loading this website at the moment, right? And then and then you get all these, like, you know, the article, I'm like, oh, okay, I get that. And then there's embedded ads and then pop-up ads and all this stuff, and it's to the point where I can only see the, like, about two lines of the text. And,
yeah.
And I have to just scroll slowly and read two at a time.
Yes, like, because like between that, the cookies pop-up, that, you know, sometimes we just don't want to click it. And then whatever pop-up bullshit, yeah, and then I got to, like, read, yeah, literally, like, one or two lines at a time. Just kind of, like, scroll at the far end of the page with my thumb so I don't trigger anything.
Yeah.
That's a terrible way to live.
It's so bad.
Yeah. And all of the streaming platforms, they forced people onto all these streaming platforms or these closed social media platforms, and they're really trying to squeeze as hard as they can. Like YouTube, YouTube's trialing the unskippable ad or something.
Oh, God.
You know? all the streaming services basically have to include ads at some point, or they're not going to make money.
Yeah.
So.
And the whole goddamn thing is spying on you. And we know that now because, like, everyone got that notice that you know, if you owned an Apple device between this time and that time, like, you're entitled to $5 per device because Apple has been spying on you through Siri, actually, in violation of their own of their own I guess of their own license, and yeah, they've been listening to you. And that's why one, and Telegram too. I mean, I was having a chat with my friends in Telegram, which is supposed to be end-to-end encrypted, right? And which we know is not true because Mossad has been Telegram, like, Iran got completely fucked because of Telegram. But, like, look, I mean, it's so blatant. I was talking to my friend, I was making a joke about how, have you guys noticed as we get older that do you guys also have a similar interest in high-waisted pants? And they were like, totally. I'm like, every year, I'm like, I want to pull the pants up just a little bit higher. But the problem now is, like, then I get sort of like, I'm kind of like in a war against my own balls here, right? Because I can't pull it too much. I need actual pants that are high waisted. I need, whatever.
Okay,
And there
side
were.
note, what is that? Is it like an like the ass deflates or what? Like the waist just doesn't hold the pants up anymore, or what's going on there?
I don't know. It's a mystery. It really is. There's just something really, really annoying about low-waisted pants. You're like, why are they so low?
I mean, I get it, like, as a woman, because a lot of pants were super low waist for a long time. It just kind of cuts you off and at like right above the hip bone, and it sucks. So a
Well,
lot
I
of
have
like.
noticed with women that they've got high-waisted pants have come back in a big way, and they have, the waistband is now, like, well above the hip. And I get jealous when I see that. I see a nice young woman walking by with really high-waisted pants. I'm like, that's the level of pants that I want. I think part of it is because when you
Is it
get
a belly
older,
thing? Like, 'cause I know
I
men put
think
on a little
part of
bit more
it
in the
is,
belly.
it's almost on the belly. I think part of it is when you're older that you really it really is, for whatever reason, like, I just got to tuck my shirt in.
Okay.
I'm a tucker now. I was not a tucker before, but now I tuck, I tuck into jeans. I tuck everything. And if you're low waisted, it's just such a precarious tuck. Do you know what I mean? Like, one high reach and the whole thing's got to be redone.
Okay.
If you have high waisted pants, that's a really secure tuck for, it's good for the whole day. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's about tuck integrity, the feeling that your bottom half is connected well to the top half, that kind of thing. Structural
Well,
integrity. It's really about structural integrity.
sure. Okay.
Anyway, so we were talking about this on Telegram. Next day, people start sending in, my friends in the chat, they start sending in screenshots. They're getting web ads all over the place for high-waisted khakis. I'm like, yeah, you're fuck. This is Telegram. You know what I mean? Like,
The thing that they're telling you to do international like wire fraud on.
yeah, they're totally spying on you in Telegram. There's no way around this shit. I mean, they're spying on you at a fucking silicon level. You know what I mean? Like, there's no, it doesn't matter. So.
Like Google's basically said, whether you authorize it or not, Gemini is going to be looking at the pictures in your camera roll if you have an Android phone.
To train,
To train.
train.
Same
You know,
with
it's going to
like
be doing
Facebook.
whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so dystopian. It's crazy.
So this is the world we live in, and this is, and as a white collar worker, if I want to make my mom proud in the old school way, then the way that I have to do this is like go get hired by one of these companies, sacrifice any chance left that I have of getting into heaven, and then grind away for the chance at like buying a nice car and putting my name on a giant mortgage that I have to live paycheck to paycheck to service.
Yeah.
Like, what is that? Is that a thing that's really supposed to be enough to keep me going for the next like quarter century I still have to be in the workforce?
Personally, I think it matters, you know. It matters to at a level of like, am I building towards something that's good for everyone, or am I part of the problem? You know, like it matters. It because it doesn't feel good to devote so much of your time towards, you know, like building shit that you know sucks and is not, you know, and you're like, I'm just part of the thing that I want to escape.
Right.
You know?
And now that even the mechanics of working in a place like that, you're still just doing whatever it takes to play all the Imperial Eunuch court games that you need to do to survive the next round of layoffs. Because it's becoming very, very clear that, you know, even tech workers who've been like pretty much like sitting at the top of the labor totem pole for a long time, we're still just inputs, very expensive inputs that
Sure.
the actual owners want to minimize as much as possible.
Yeah, I think so.
That effect has become very, very clear. So there's far less goodwill to kind of like to kind of sacrifice yourself on the altar for a chance at the table. It's really just staying one step of it. It just means like being willing to backstab, scheme, lie, and cheat to not lose your job. So the actual like effect of working in a place like that sucks too. I think for a while maybe you could kind of float by on okay, I'm doing terrible work, doing terrible things, but it's stable employment. I can at least, you know, be comfortable knowing that I can send my kids off to college. I'll have a job 10 years from now. I have a sort of okay life. Fine, whatever the fuck ever. I'll just do it. But all the lies are coming apart at the seams now at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think that this is created like the emergence of this like sort of I don't think it's limited to tech, but you know, of the very highly compensated worker, and they're just workers, you know, and they, you know, in a way they don't really get ahead because it's like, yeah, they make a lot of money, but they're all located in like super high cost of living areas, and so they're all like they're materially just like middle class, except, you know, when your house is $3.5 million, it feels like you're rich, even though your house
Except
is, it's
that's
a
coming
split.
apart at the seams too. Have you seen what a 3.5 million, what 3.5 million gets you in
That
like Palo
that's my
Alto?
point. Like materially, you're not actually that much better off. It's just everything costs a lot more, and it feel, you know, it feels wealthier. And you know, like, yeah, a 3.5 million in Silicon Valley is, you know, in a Midwestern neighborhood will be 300, will literally be one tenth the price.
Yeah, like
I
you
mean, these
drew a picture
houses
of this
look like
$300,000.
$400,000 houses. So,
Yeah. It's the
materially, you're not better off.
you show a picture of this house to like literally anybody outside the circle, and it's that meme of Hillary Clinton walking into that cramped apartment looking like, bitch, you live like this?
Right.
Like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's what it's like.
Yeah. It's like living in a company town where, you know, everyone gets paid 10x more and everything costs 10x more. So
Right.
it's like, okay, so what's the point? But like I do think it's created and this is a problem that's now spreading, I think, throughout the country, which is like it creates workers that don't realize that they're workers, and everyone talks like they're like MBA bros, and everyone thinks that they're MBA bros, and everyone is sort of, there's an MBification going on of the entire country where people don't realize, I'm like, dude, you're just a fucking salary worker, and you could be thrown out at any time, and but everyone thinks they're like part of the industry. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but like there's just this, everyone is becoming sort of like a capitalist in their mind. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know, it's just really gross. It's just
No,
really
I get
gross.
it.
And
'Cause it's like the infect like the language and the culture of financialization has crept into everything.
everything, fucking everything, you know. I mean,
Know where
I
I
swear
really
to
see
God,
this?
normal, like just everyday people will work into regular conversation like ROI, you know, like what's your
People
ROI on
treat
that?
dating
Like,
like this.
People right. What's my ROI on her, you know? Like, ugh.
Yeah. God. Yeah, like if I spend, you know, $150 on dinner, she's like a 6, maybe a soft 7 in the right lighting.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I'll go for it.
Yeah.
You know, like...
It's so bleak.
Quantifying down to, like, some sense of value, and then your goal, the only moral good in this scenario that you've constructed is to maximize your own. That's it.
That's it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And everything is fungible.
It's leak coding life itself, you know?
Mm-hmm. So long as line go up in whatever little like dashboard you've created in your head, then everything is justified.
Yeah.
Any kind of like moral depravity can be rationalized away as an externality, basically.
I've got nothing good to say about this. And I don't really think that there is a way out. I mean, in the sense of like, I don't think this is going to turn around anytime soon. I think we're looking at the inevitable result of, you know, a fundamentally broken and corrupt society. And that's just how it's going to be.
It's to the point where I see people talk about like late stage capitalism or like the terminal state of, you know, this. And it's like, that actually even sounds optimistic. Actually sounds like this shit's going to end at some point.
Something's going to have to give. I'm like, no, there's a stability and sturdiness to this as well, to this sort of like overlord system that we're in. That's not going away anytime soon. And, you know, I think it's scary because more and more you're seeing, like, at least for the lieutenants of the system, the officers of this system. And to me, it's very much like a sort of almost a paramilitary type system.
Mm-hmm.
I think of it that way because it's an extreme rigid hierarchy. I think it's like a sort of corporate paramilitary thing where the hierarchical systems are extremely rigid. And when you're in the service, it's like you're fucking in. And personal time is really more like R&R. It's more, you know, it's more like a benefit to even have a personal life outside of work. And that's considered a perk of work. You know what I mean? I'm starting to see that the lieutenants within the system, like, they can't see it any other way. Like, that's the problem, is like, there's no more vision. Like, I at least feel grateful that I grew up in a time early enough where it wasn't quite like this, or at least not this bad. And I've seen it change. But now I feel like my generation is often quite guilty of this too, but like they just can't see it any other way. They're like, this is just how it is. What are you talking? This is life.
Yeah, this is
they don't
want to
know anything.
Water...
They don't think there's anything else other than this.
Yeah, this is the whole like telling a fish it's wet thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the entire, if you came up
I'm sure a lot of people listening to this are scratching their head wondering what the fuck we're talking about.
I think we have a cool crowd. I think we have a cool crowd.
Yeah.
So I'm going to cut. I'm going to say more people are nodding along than being like, what the fuck?
Right.
If there are the what the fuckers out there, let us know. Let's have it out.
Yeah.
I think a real pivotal moment is 9/11. Like where you were in relation to 9/11.
Sure.
Yes. I think like you, you're a little older than me, but like I can still remember a time before 9/11, and there was a big societal, like cultural shift that happened right around then.
Mm-hmm. I was like 23 at the time. So in fact, right now, probably half my life was pre 9/11 and the other half was post 9/11. So yes,
Oh, interesting. Totally agree. Okay. Yeah. I was still in high school, but, but I can still remember, I can remember shit like the TSA not getting to second base as a prerequisite to get on a plane. I remember just like walking with my dad and waving him off at the gate.
Yeah, you could walk to the gate. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember like there's just That sounds like a small example, but I really think that if you kind of grew up with this like sort of literal paramilitary presence in your life and just accepting that as okay, like they take 3D scans of you every time you want to get on a plane. What the hell is going on there? Do we even have an answer for any of this?
I think the major issue, the major change, you can see it now with Israel, where you're not allowed to call a spade. You're not allowed to see, call out what it is you clearly see with your own eyes. Everything is about, everything was about 9/11. Everything was about security. If you had any disagreement with what they were doing, going to war, locking, turning, locking everything down, taking away personal freedoms and all that stuff. If you disagreed with any of it, they called you a traitor. And they said it's because you forgot 9/11. It's because you forgot about what it takes to secure our freedom and all this stuff. And they
And if
use
you're on the
this.
if you're on the other side of the paper bag, the wrong side of the paper bag test, then it's, oh, you must be working for them.
Yes, yeah, it became really weird, and people forget, like, we got dragged into that kicking and screaming. I mean, people were not happy about this at all, but they eventually win. And I think, like, you're right. I think post 9/11 has been a huge transition towards a much more hierarchical, rigid security state. That's why everything feels kind of paramilitary right now. And all the
It's
tech companies turned
normalized.
out to be, all the tech, major tech companies turned out to be arms of the government and arms of the security state. And they are spying on everyone all the time. And they help, they're all helping governments wage, quote, war, fucking basically like crimes, like war crimes.
Yeah, and in Silicon Valley, that's you actually cannot like for all those big companies, acquiescing to government demands is a prerequisite for like these any company that stood up against this kind of intrusion would be shut down. So like it's not about all they're all just all literally all in collusion. A lot of times it's like Facebook couldn't get past a certain size until they agreed to like local gov like police departments and state governments demands. And that's how they got gain like further penetration into the market.
That's right.
Like the
These
Patriot
got
Act. Can't talk about 9/11 without name dropping the Patriot Act.
yeah.
There was a significant shift. That's kind of when like the government setting being defaulting to always private, that became normalized. Like I that probably wasn't stated very well, but I feel like 9/11 is the tipping point between even the private citizens' expectation that the government is open with information. And then now, if you want anything, you have to, it's the default expectation that the government will be secretive about this. And whatever scrap of information you get, you have to beg and plead for. Like default on versus default off is a pretty big switch to flip.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it. We're, like all of the things that we grew up hearing about the Soviet Union or Communist China or North Korea or whatever, and having this sort of like evil autocratic government that spied on everyone and was hell-bent on taking over the world once it had an opportunity and whatever. And it was the right and obligation of the people of that country to either defect or find a way out or dissent against the system or whatever, provide resistance against it. That's the system we're living in. I mean, undoubtedly, I don't think there's any fucking doubt about this anymore. If there's doubt about that, I'm like, I don't know how much more proof you need. There's so much evidence. The difficulty is actually figuring out which how to order it and digest it all. But there's no lack of evidence. I mean, it's just an overwhelming amount of evidence that we're living in a completely corrupted, and dystopian, rather evil society. And it doesn't feel good to work and contribute within such a society. It just doesn't. I'm sorry.
It's claustrophobic. It breeds paranoia. I mean, just the amount of fucking spam calls, bullshit. The spam texts and spam calls I get on an everyday basis. If we're talking about what's a visible sign of decay, let's start with let's go with that one too. They've almost gotten me a couple times. Like one was a very official looking text saying that I had a parking ticket that was unpaid.
Oh, like right. Click here to, I got that one too, actually.
So they almost got me. So I think if we're talking about like psychological effect, I think it does breed a kind of like paranoia and a kind of reflexive defensiveness, like in people, you're less willing to trust, less willing to be open. And for good reason, it's hard to say that that's a bad thing because you kind of have to be, or I would have gotten fished or whatever the hell from that spam text. You have to be kind of like, so it's kind of funny that it's breeding people to be both distrustful. And then also if you can find the right hack in, extremely susceptible to manipulation. Because people want, still need that kind of connection and reassurance. So if you're able to be like a master manipulator, this is how you can get your own little cult going pretty quickly.
At least, you know, at least the system, all systems are a bit evil, right? Like all of these like states do nefarious and evil shit. I mean, I don't believe in the idea that, you know, any one country is a force for good while another country is a force for bad. I think they're basically set up the same way. The problem with us is that one of the foundational, like, the foundation of such a state is that it's supposed to take care of its people.
Yeah.
And we don't take care of our own people. And that's the part that lately really has gotten me, that's the part that's really bad, because I think that the social contract is gone, and it's now clearly a Hunger Games type thing where, you know, what everyone's looking for is, I still think that the lieutenants of the system, the professional class, I still think that they're mixed up in the status game. They still are clinging on to a completely propagandized view of the system as functioning, but only insofar as you have the merit to stay within the system. And they are working and spending like crazy in order to stay within the good graces of the system. And I think that they're basically playing the Squid Game. They're not trying to find a way out of the Squid Game. They're playing the game as, you know, according to the official rules, which is really not how you're going to win this game.
Yeah, they're playing musical chairs as a death match.
Yeah,
I totally understand.
They're being pitted and manipulated against each other, and I don't really think they know it, or they do, and they're just like, okay, but I at least I'm going to outlast everyone else, which you can't.
Well, I mean, I think it's a self-selecting system. I think a good part of them, maybe the lower ranking people, a lot of us are just kind of caught up in this because we just kind of got like drugged and thrown in the back of the van, and now we're stuck in this bullshit. Okay, fine, whatever. And then there's a smaller subset that just have the psychological makeup to kind of thrive in that kind of environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it is a so this is why like all these sociopaths seem to be coming out of the woodwork, because it is this is their time.
Yeah, it is.
It's the
era of the sociopath. Totally.
Yeah. I mean, going back to a previous point you made. I don't like the typical like leftist or conservative framework of like, this is good, this state is good, this state is bad. Mm-hmm. My hypothesis, I think we talked about it on a different pod before too, like I think all sophisticated states are authoritarian in their own way. There's just no way around it. You have to be able to manage a big population.
Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously not everyone is going to be treated well at all times in a system like that. It's just, it cannot, someone is always going to lose in that kind of system.
I honestly feel like a lot of the China stuff has swung over to the point where I'm like, dude, okay, now you're just becoming propagandists for China. You know what I mean?
Right.
Let's not think that China doesn't have a very sophisticated security state as well. And that
you have to.
The Communist Party, it ain't all fucking rainbows and unicorns either, okay? You think it's easy to get up there into the central... Like, I don't know. I feel like they have... A lot of the pro-China people have swung so far. And I'm like, you're not even really being realistic about China anymore. You're just doing this to demean America, which I don't have a problem with. But I'm just saying, like, that doesn't mean that what you're saying is true.
Right.
I mean, go ahead, demean America. I mean, I don't give a shit. I mean, good. Right? Like, it deserves
like, I'll
it.
Join you.
I'll
like,
join you.
Nobody
like,
knows.
Yeah,
nobody
but you
knows
don't need
how
to propagandize China in that process to make it out to be like, it's a more effective state. I think they do their job more effectively, but that also
you
does
get
require them to be more ruthless. I think in a way,
does.
Like more effectively ruthless.
Like being able to just clear out like half a province to build the Three Gorges.
Yeah.
You're not, I mean, that's authoritarian. That's draconian.
Totally
a lot of people probably,
okay. They're just
the
better
only
at
thing,
it. That's,
the social
really
contract
it.
There. It's not about like authoritarian versus not authoritarian. It's saying, what are you getting in exchange for the sacrifice of your personal freedoms?
Yeah.
In exchange for the labor that they are compelling or the taxes or whatever they're compelling for you, are you getting enough from this authoritarian body to make that deal worthwhile? That's the problem I have with America.
Right. None of this shit
makes
sense.
Government doesn't owe you anything. Do you know how much fucking taxes I pay? I am a shareholder at this point, and I am not getting my ROI.
My ROI is a bunch of fucking videos of like Palestinian babies with their legs blown off. Literally, that's my fucking
yeah.
ROI. That's what I fucking get. And then if I have a problem with it, I am anti-Semite. That's the fucking society I live in now.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, I think a lot of people are fed up with it. I'm like, good, keep pushing it, dude. Keep pushing it. Seriously. Keep pushing this shit. Regular fucking white people are tired of it. I'm like, trust, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
that's when you know this shit's about to fall apart is when regular ass white people are like, this is too much.
This isn't what I voted for.
Yeah, I'm like,
I just want
regular white people happy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like I think we touched on this a lot in the COVID years and the post COVID turmoil, like. Things get really bad when you squeeze the enforcer class.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about we don't have a middle class. We all get that. There's the 1%, and then in demography, we call the next 9. We talk about the next 9 a lot. The next 9 is the one that's probably under the most social and economic pressure at the moment. I'm not saying that's not to deny that, like, the
people. No. You don't have to apologize for saying that. I think we're all on board with what you're saying.
Yeah, I understand that there's severe problems in the bottom quintiles. I'm saying that they're focusing on
the ground
has
already given for them. They've already lost the Squid Game.
Right.
Like, these people are still in it, right? Like they're the survivors, but they're getting
killed
off, you know.
And because the market this is the only population of people that still has money.
They have something to lose because
they
still think that they're in the running for winning.
Right. So now, you know, you raise, you know, inflation eats away at their grocery bills, fuel costs. Now they're everyone's home insurance, property tax is going up, tuition is going up. This is the population.
Job losses are mounting specifically in their sector.
Right. That's the story from the last couple of years. That's the white collar classes getting like curb stomped at the moment and squeezed for all they've gotten.
Of course it's them, because everyone else already got curb stomped.
Right. Everyone else already got squeezed out. This is the only remaining profit center.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course it's not going to happen to them because they have nothing to lose, you know?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, unemployment is actually doing well for, like, you know, the lower end of the pay scale. I'm like, yeah, employment there sucks. Losing your job
anything
there
anything would be a...
Everything there, having a job there sucks. Like, it's all already shit. It doesn't matter. So
I don't really, I forgot where I was trying to go with that. Just saying like,
No. You were saying like they were the ones getting squeezed the most.
Yeah. Know? That's yeah. Yeah.
No, I agree. True. I think that, for example, like this pod, like, you know, probably our audience and probably us, like we find ourselves in that. I mean, I was always in that tier, right? Always the sort of lieutenant, the lieutenant officer class.
You know, not quite big, like the capitalists. We weren't really raised up to be like titans. We're not groomed to be like heirs to local, I don't know, HVAC empires or whatever the fuck.
You're supposed to be a careerist.
Yeah, you're supposed to get a job, maybe get, you know, earn a decent wage, raise a family, just fall in.
Yeah.
Be a striver.
Yeah. And as far as I'm concerned, that it is being in that class, I'm like, dude, you're not going to be part of the ruling class. You're not going to have power. You're not going to achieve it. Even the people I know that have come quite close to it, I'm like, still, you're even in the... I mean, it's a fuzzy line. I mean, I don't think there's a clear binary way to tell if someone is in the ruling class or not. But, like, you know, I have family friends that have made it to cabinet positions in the White House. And I'm like, still at that level, you're nothing. You know what I mean? Like, still at that level, U.S. Trade Representative? Oh, come on. You don't make any decisions. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You have a very fancy title. And then after 4 years, you know, you're going to try and go back into corporate world and do this and, you know, whatever. Like, I don't know. I'm not convinced that there's any actual path to power, because power now is so high. It's so fucking... We're talking, you have to be an oligarch now. There's like 10 people with power, okay? Being an excellent careerist, I don't care how high you go or how much money you make, you're not part of it. That's my opinion. People can disagree with me, but I'm like, you're not going to achieve sovereignty. You're not going to achieve true sovereignty until you get to like Murdoch level. It's not going to happen.
Sure. And it really, I think I came around to, because we were talking in the DMs, about what, you know, the distinction between power and wealth and how, you know, fungible and interchangeable those were. I thought about what you said, because look at the Elon Musk arc from the last 6 months.
Yeah.
This is the richest, technically on paper, like, I don't know what his liquid net worth is, but isn't he still like the world's richest person or something?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But in terms of how fungible that is with power.
Yeah, not that easy.
I mean, think like the dust still needs to settle on, you know, all the shit that he did with Doge and whatnot in the White House, and he was literally like Trump's right hand man for quite a few months there, had his hand in a lot of different pieces of bullshit that we've been subjected to in the last half year or so. I still wouldn't say that he's all that powerful.
He's not part of the establishment of power. I think he's built up a
world's
lot of...
World's richest guy who had the ear of the world's most powerful, single most powerful man. And look at the legacy that he's left behind in his time in the adjacent to the White House.
Yeah. Though I would clearly put him in the realm of a person with power, but you're right. I think that he demonstrates that, like, even he cannot quite crack establishment power.
He did not accomplish his goals.
Yeah.
I think maybe to the extent that there was, you know, a plan for what that people wanted out of him, maybe they were successful in getting that out of him. Like, just get in there and cause as much chaos. Just stir it all up so nobody can really tell what's going on. And then the actual power players will come in and do what we need to do.
Should we?
But in that case, he was manipulated.
Should we? Because I want to talk. Maybe we can discuss this concept of, like, I don't know. Maybe we could just talk about I can tell you how I've reoriented my thinking about, you know, just life within such a system. But we could make that.
I kind of want to get into. Uh-huh. I want to get into like how this attitude towards work has shifted over time.
Yeah. Should we transition here then to the bonus?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. All right. So we will continue this discussion on the bonus half of it. If you want to get access to bonus pods, go to patreon.com/planningmag. All right. See y'all.